Carl Reiner, the ingenious and versatile writer, actor, and director who broke through as a second banana to Sid Caesar and rose to comedy's front ranks as creator of The Dick Van Dyke Show and straight man to Mel Brooks' 2,000-year-old man, died on Monday. He was 98. Carl Reiner was one of show business's best like men. His was a welcome face on the small and silver screens in Caesar's 1950s troupe, as the self-absorbed Alan Brady of The Dick Van Dyke Show, and in such films as The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, and It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Reiner directed such films as Oh God, starring George Burns and John Denver, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, The Jerk, and All of Me, all starring Steve Martin. His books include Enter Laughing, an autobiographical novel later adapted into a film and Broadway show, and My Anecdotal Life, a memoir published in 2003. He recounted his childhood and creative journey in the 2013 book I Remember Me. He was on this program many times over the years. In 2006, he joined us to talk about his novel NNNNN. We listened to that interview this morning to celebrate Carl Reiner, because talking to him was always a pleasure.
We'll find out at the end if it's a pleasure. At the beginning, it's easy to be a pleasure.
So normally I would give the title of the book, but in this case I have a problem. Is the title NNNNN or N?
No, I would say NNNNN. You can say N to save yourself time when you go order it. Say, I'll have that N book. But then they're going to say, what did you say? And you're going to have to say N.
And there's five of them, five N's.
There are five N's.
Where did the title come from?
Well, it's so logical that it sounds silly. But it's a novel within a novel. And the guy who's writing the novel within the novel has always, he's a novelist. And his first novel, before it was titled, he put N for novel, like, but Woody Allen just says untitled, you know, until the 30th page, or maybe sometimes not till the end of the book, do you have a title that comes into your mind for the book, an appropriate title. So he always put N, this guy. His name was Nat Nolan, so he's a little, he likes the letter N. He's not superstitious exactly, but he has a preference for N's. So N, his first book, he titled Normal, and it became a hit. A bit of a hit, and he decided to go with that technique. The second book was Two Ends, and he named that, I think, Nadezhda. But now this is his fifth novel, so he's got five ends. And he reasons with himself, when he's looking for a novel that has ends in it, at one point he says, what about, by the way, he talks to himself a lot, and that's one of the premises of the book. His man is a bit of he's a little askew. He talks to himself out loud and doesn't know that he is doing that until his wife points it out to him. But he decides that when he's titling this particular book, he decides one of the great titles of all time was a Fritz Lang movie in 1930, a German expressionist movie with Peter Lorre that had just one letter, M. And he said that, and it's true. It's always on the list of the great titles because they said that single letter M has mystery and intrigue. And in talking to himself, he says, you know, five N's has five times the mystery and five times. So he decides to title the book NNNNN. And then I, the author of the guy who's writing the book within a book, Carl Reiner, decides to title my book NNNN. So that's why the NNN. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, oddly. The last time you joined us talking about My Anecdotal Life, you mentioned that you were working on this particular book. So you've had this idea for a while.
By the way, My Anecdotal Life, I'm going to say this once and one time only. Unlike that guy on Oprah, My Anecdotal Life, every word is true. And this particular book, and then every word is a lie. So let's get that out of the way so we don't
All
have
right.
to...
Good.
Now, what happened is I wrote the first four pages. When I was doing The Anecdotal Life, I wrote four pages, and I didn't know where the heck it was going. And I put it aside, and I wrote something in between. And then I said I was intrigued with the idea of rewriting Genesis. I mean, an author decides that Genesis always never made a lot of sense to me. He said, there must be some other things that were missing. And he says, I'm a writer. The guy who wrote Genesis was a writer. I've got more information than he had. I lived 5,000 years longer. Why don't I write my version of Genesis and what happened in the Garden of Eden with Cain and Abel? And who was the villain? Was Cain the villain? And so he writes his, and I just had 5 pages, and I didn't know what to do with it. And then I picked it up 2 years later. Yeah, that's right. I said, where does this go? And in talking to myself, I found the character of the novelist. He talks to himself and doesn't know he's talking to himself. And that's the guy I wrote about. It's a novel within a novel. We followed the Genesis story with Cain and Abel, finding out about where they came from and how they developed and to how their world developed. And we also find out who this guy is and why he talks to himself. So both stories are incorporated into the book.
You mentioned the two stories. This book has many facets. There's a mystery, a family drama, a comedic tale, obviously. There's a statement about race and marriage and fidelity. There's a lot in those 200 pages.
You know something? I'm so proud of you. You read the book.
I did read the book.
Yeah, and you're saying all the things I love to hear, because I just got a wonderful letter from somebody and mentioned just what you said. And I said, you know, I wasn't looking to do what I did, but what happens is you start putting into every character your character. Somebody says, this is not autobiographical. Of course it isn't. But everything an author writes is autobiographical. You can't write anything that is not inside you, whether it got inside you from birth or from absorption, whatever it is, it's coming out of you. And all the things that came out of me, the things you mentioned, and I didn't know I was going to do that. It just came out.
You know, I even heard one reviewer call it a sexy page turner.
Oh, send me that reviewer.
Do you like writing sexy?
I love it because it's, you know, that's why we're here. If we weren't sexy, none of us would be here. It's such a pleasure to make kids. It's a pleasure. The process of making them is such a pleasure, and then the hard part is raising them. But it's a good part of life. It's what many people find it the only part of life that they can enjoy.
You do get a sense in reading this book that you very much like this character of Nat Nolan.
I do. I really do, because he's on a quest, as we all are. Where are we going? And how do I get there? You don't even know where you're going. This is what's exciting to me about it. You really don't know what life holds in store for you. You just don't know. I mean, you can make all your plans and have them implemented in a way, but all of a sudden something comes up that you don't expect. It could be good and it could be bad.
Your first novel was Enter Laughing, that was published 48 years ago.
Yes, and by Simon & Schuster, same publisher.
How did that particular book come to me, and how do you think you have evolved as a novelist?
Well, that's two good questions. How that came to be is rather a funny story, and I used it in my anecdotal life. When I came out of the Army, I was a teletype operator, I was on the show of shows as an actor / writer without portfolio. And one day I was wondering how much of my skills as a typist still existed. And I went down into my den in New Rochelle, and I typed up a four-page short story, and I showed it to my wife, and she said, where'd you get this? I said, I wrote it. She said, that's good. So her saying that's good catapulted me into a short story binge. In the next 3-4 days, I wrote 3 or 4 short stories. By the end of a couple of months, I had, a dozen, maybe more than a dozen. I said, wouldn't that be a good book, you know, 35 short stories, call it a penny a story for a paperback, because in paperbacks in those days were 35 cents. That was my idea. And I had a friend in New Rochelle, gave him my short stories to read, because he was a textile manufacturer, but a very literate man. And he said, these are good. Can I let a friend of mine read these? I said, sure, they're written to be read. And at a party, a guy comes over to me, and he said, these are good, et cetera, et cetera. And he wanted to have lunch with me. And he said he was in pocketbooks. And I assumed, because my friend was a textile manufacturer, this guy bought his pocketbook linings, the linings for his pocketbooks. Right. When he said pocketbooks, I went to my friend and I said, he wants to have lunch with me. Do I have to have lunch with him? He says, you ought to. I said, why? What are you going to do for me? I said, you know, he, I thought because I was a celebrity and knew Sid Caesar, you wanted a lunch with me. He says, no, he can help you. I said, well, what? He's going to give me a pocketbook wholesale. He said, no, that's Simon & Schuster pocketbooks. And that's how I got those 12 short stories to Simon & Schuster. And at Simon & Schuster, they said, you know, short stories don't sell. Take one of those stories and make a novel out of it, or try to make it. And that became Mental Laughing. Is that a good story?
As we know, they were all good stories. Carl Reiner was born in 1922 in the Bronx, one of two sons of Jewish immigrants. He grew up in a working-class neighborhood where he learned to mimic voices and tell jokes. After high school, he was pretty sure what he wanted to do with his life.
My initial desire was to be an actor, and that happened when I was about 18 or 17, 18. I went to a summer theater, spent 3 years in summer theater, and then went on a Shakespearean repertory company touring four plays, and slipped into comedy by going to a summer resort and becoming an actor in a revue and doing straight man to a comedian and then hosting the game nights and becoming an MC. And then when I got in the Army, I started doing a stand-up and ended up in special services as an actor comedian.
And your show of shows, were you hired as a performer or as a writer or both?
No, I was hired as a performer. My writing was without portfolio, just making suggestions. And I was invited into the writing room on my third week because I came up with the idea for doing foreign movie double talk takeoffs. And because I could do double talk, but Sid was the master, and I never thought I'd be able to compete with him. So I came up with the idea that we'd both be doing double talk, but in a movie setting, you know, with a story and a plot, doing one of the takeoffs of the movies of the day, like Open City. There were some great Italian and French movies we used to see every week.
What's the key to doing good double talk?
Knowing a little bit of the language, being stupid and not being able to speak the language, but having an ear so that you have the sound of the language, and then throwing in a couple of words. You know, in the Romance language, they all have roots. They're similar roots, the Latin roots. So you throw a few words in that make the audience understand what you're talking about by words that would be in any of the three languages, certainly the Romance languages.
When did the writing begin for you, really? You were, as you say, you were writing on your show of shows. When did it really start creating a spark that you wanted to create your own program?
Well, you know, it happened more. One of the writers in the writer's room, I was considered an actor, a writer without portfolio. When I make a suggestion, they would either be taken or I would get some guff from the head writer, who was very funny. He said to me, you're nothing but a friggin' actor. And the word friggin' was used, the word that we can use. He said, what are you, that's no good, that's your freaking actor, keep quiet. So I took umbrage, and I was the first one, and I sat down and wrote Into Laughing at that point, not at that point, but right around that time, 1958, it was 8 years, I'm sorry, I was on the show for 8 years with Sid, and the head writer was still there, and I remember writing, I was the first one to write a novel, and I sent it to Mel Tolkien, and he wrote me a wonderful note saying, you're not only a friggin' actor, you're a friggin' good writer. And now I just kept that note. But that's when it started. It was like, I did it to I'll Show You. I think we did, a lot of people do a lot of things to I'll Show You. That's not the real reason I wrote it. But I was very pleased that I was able to get my wings.
Certainly there is the subject matter, but how much of an inspiration was working on your show of shows for you to create the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Everything. Everything. I wouldn't have created it. After the show of shows ended, the musical variety shows did not exist. There was a couple. I think the Dinah Shore Show was one of them, and as a matter of fact, I worked on that as a writer and not-so-special guest star. That's the way I was billed. I used to be on every other week. I'd be writing every week, but every other week I'd be at the not-so-special guest star. Special guest star, Yves Montand, and not-so-special guest star, Carl Reiner. But situation comedies were offered me, and my wife and I thought they weren't very good, and she's the one who said, you ought to try to write one of these. And I said, and this is, by the way, talking to myself, which the guy in the book does.
Right.
I was talking to myself in the car on the FDR Drive in New York, And I asked myself, I said, hey, Carl, what ground do you stand on that nobody else stands on? Looking for a premise for a situation comedy. I said, well, I live in New Rochelle. I have a wife and kids. I work in television as a writer, actor, in a television variety show. And that's what I wrote about. I wrote a pilot for myself. I wrote 13 episodes before I even became a pilot because I said, if I do this, I better have a Bible for other writers to be able to know who these people are. And I did the pilot. It was a fairly good pilot. It didn't sell, and I got very upset. I said, this is the best shot I could give it. And I, right after that, I wrote a movie for Darcy and James Garner. I figured that was going to be my career. I'd write movies. And Sheldon Leonard and I had a mutual agent who brought us together. And Sheldon Leonard was a partner with Danny Thomas at the mm-hmm. time. And they had heard about the 13 scripts and read them, and they thought they should be done. And I said to Sheldon, I said, Sheldon, I don't want to fail twice with the same material. And he said, and if you know who Sheldon Leonard was, he played a tout in movies. He was a wonderful character. He was an educated guy who talked like a hood. He said, Reiner, you won't fail because we'll get a better actor to play you, is the way he put it. We'll get a better actor to play you. And he did. He suggested Dick Van Dyke.
Head of the Family is the name of the original pilot.
Yes, that you look read. How you knew that.
Well, it's on DVD, thankfully, now, and it's pretty great to watch.
Oh, that's good.
A fun show to watch.
But you can see, if I had done the show, we wouldn't be talking about the show because the amount of talent that Dick has is just insurmountable. He's an unbelievable talent.
Why do you think that show worked? How much of it was obviously writing, but the casting is terrific, too.
You know, I think the foreground of the show, which is the actors, is the thing that attracts you to the show. And now if they don't say stupid things and you have those attractive people making your lines even seem more depth than they are, that's what makes a winning conversation. But it's always the writing that keeps the show on. It's the people who get you want to watch that show.
One of the great holiday gifts this year was the 5 seasons of The Dick Van Dyke Show on DVD. And just watching them back-to-back and realizing the genius of that program. But when you think about it, by today's standards, certainly, 5 years is not a very long time.
Yeah, but 5 years is a long time when you think the amount of shows we packed in.
Right.
And we did, by the way, we think in terms of minutes and hours, those shows were 26 or 27 minutes, 27 and a half sometime, and today the half hour is 22 and 20 minutes. And we did 39 shows a season or 35, 30, and today they do 22. So we did 158 shows in 5 seasons. And today 150 shows, you'd have to go through 10 seasons.
That's a good point. At what point did you realize, though, it was time to move on?
Well, you know, our foreground, our actors, were not stars of other media like they were in the days of the Jack Benny Show, Father Knows Best. They were all actors who had made their marks either in movies or in radio and were stars of that. And so our actors were rather young yet, and I still hadn't tried my wings as a writer or director in motion pictures. I'd written a couple, but I hadn't directed yet. And so we all had things we wanted to try. And we also knew that we were, after 158 shows, we were starting to repeat ourselves a little bit. And we said, you know, we can go out. If we knew this is the last year, we would work very hard to make the last year as good as we could. And that last year, seeing the end of the tunnel, made us race there with a lot of energy, but good energy.
Out of all of the things that you've done and all of the projects that you've accomplished in television and film and now, of course, the novels as well, what are you proudest of? What are you ultimately, when you look back at your career, you're proud of?
Well, as far as in career-wise, they jump out at you very quickly. You know, it's a show of shows. My days with Mel Brooks interviewing him, doing The 2,000-Year-Old Man, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and a couple of movies that I directed. Those are all, I think that the honest thing is that I got 3 kids who are so wonderful. And they're such non-toxic human beings. They're a good addition to the world. They're really wonderful people. And that's the best of it. And then the last thing is that my brain is still working. That's the thing I'm most proud of. That at 83, I finished this book at 83, and it turned out to be the best thing I've ever written, I think. And I say that with knowledge that I've done some good things before me, but this one tickled me more than anything I've ever done. Maybe because it's so late in my life. But I got another one coming out, not coming out, coming out of my head, I mean.
In our final moment, I was reading a very funny story about you receiving the Mark Twain Prize for humor a few years back. You're in the balcony in the Kennedy Center. They're honoring you.
Oh, I want to tell that.
What happens?
Well, you know something? This was one of those moments that you dread in motion and when you're a performer. But if you're a performer and a comedian, you don't really dread anything because things go wrong, you can make them right. They said, the Kennedy Center presents the Mark Twain Prize. That's the very beginning. The lights come up on the screen, the logo plays, and all of a sudden, everything goes black. Something failed. The electricity failed in the building. And it's quiet for a good, it seemed like an hour, but it was probably 40 seconds. And I'm up in the balcony, sitting in the box with my family. And I scream at the top of my lungs, has anybody here got 4 AA batteries? Well, the place screamed with laughter, And the producer came to me and he said, I said to him, hey, you're going to leave that in, aren't you? He says, I can't. It puts a pall on everything. I said, no. I says, it's about comedy. I said, here you're honoring a guy, and he's the guy who comes up with the joke that breaks up the place. They'll think it's planned, but I said, we'll know that it's not. Anyway, it was 4 years later, because we did this Steve Martin tribute this year,
right.
And I was there, and this guy came up to me, and he said, you know, what a stupid thing we did. I can't tell you how stupid we were after we didn't do that. We didn't let it come on the air that way. But I love that. That's what comedians do, by the way. They just say the most obvious thing a moment before anybody else says it.
Well, your latest project is a wonderful novel by the title of NNNNN. It is published by Simon & Schuster, and it's just a terrific read. Read it this past weekend, and it was just wonderful. Carl Reiner, what a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In 2006, Carl Reiner joined us to talk about his novel NNNNN. He also mentioned his book, My Anecdotal Life. Carl Reiner died on Monday at the age of 98.